You're not quite awake yet. You're drifting, sort of, in a...
in a never-never land. They think that they're due this money for free. They've been taught to live in a welfare society. We're continuing the welfare mentality. We're going back to welfare.
Back to welfare. Welfare states and new deals. While the economy stumbles into the future, Congress revisits debates from a generation or two ago. Legislation to save a nation or depression reenactors. The debates of wrath on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. Our friend Jerome Vaughn from WDET in Detroit is in once again for Adora Udoji. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning, John. Coming up this hour, we'll break down the Obama budget outline. We'll also discuss governors who are turning down stimulus money and take a look at the role of American diplomatic envoys. Those stories and more coming up, but first, let's take a look at the headlines.
President Obama delivered his 2010 budget outline to Congress yesterday with changes for health care, energy, and taxes. The 140-page budget provided plenty of fodder for conversation in the halls of Congress. House Minority Leader John Boehner says it's misguided.
The administration's plan, I think, is a job killer, plain and simple. And it raises taxes on all Americans while we're in the middle of a recession.
Democrats, like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, called the budget a blueprint for the future.
It reflects the values that he conveyed about investing in education and energy and health care. Also in how we grow our economy through infrastructure and how we support our troops.
Right now, we only have the 140-page outline. The administration will flesh out the plan with further details in April, Jerome.
Today, the president will travel to North Carolina to announce his plans to withdraw most American troops from Iraq by 2010. In a closed-door meeting yesterday, the president told Republican and Democratic leaders that up to 50,000 troops will stay behind. They'll advise Iraqi forces and protect U.S. interests. The chief investment officer of Stanford Financial Group is due in federal court today. Laura Pendergrass Holt was arrested in Houston yesterday. She's accused of obstructing an SEC investigation of an alleged $8 billion investment fraud involving Texas billionaire Alan Stanford. He's facing civil charges of lying about investments.
Our partner, the New York Times, is reporting that the Treasury Department reached a deal late last night to change the terms of its loan to the bank Citigroup. The government will convert up to $25 billion of its preferred stock into common stock. That's believed to be a much riskier investment. Later on this morning, we'll hear the GDP from last quarter. It's expected to have shrunk more than 5%. The Dow and the S&P both fell more than 1% yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average opens today at 71.82, and the S&P begins trading at 7.53. So maybe you've had a chance to read about the budget. Maybe you've slept on it. Maybe you're reenacting the Depression like some of the debaters in Congress are. The budget is being described as a priority shift, a blueprint for the future. Do you think these are the right priorities? Tell us your thoughts on the budget at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. The debates of wrath on the Obama budget.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry with Jerome Vaughn from WDET, and we've had a great week talking to and about Detroit and southeastern Michigan with you these past several days, Jerome. Thanks for being here.
It's been great
to be here. You know, I was looking at the budget that came out yesterday. We finally got our hands on it, 140-page outline. Listen to a couple of these numbers. 24.1% The budget is 24.1% of next year's estimated gross domestic product, you know, the GDP. That's estimated to be the highest percentage really since World War II. This is an enormously significant budget that really takes us back to an era of, say, Johnson or Franklin Roosevelt, where Congress had to deal with serious programmatic shifts, big changes, big ideas. The question really, I think, as the budget lands in Washington, is the Congress ready to do this kind of work? We've seen really for a generation now, since the end of the Nixon era, Congress dealing with lots of symbolic kinds of votes on flag burning, votes on sort of incremental kinds of things. Even the Clinton era didn't have as aggressive a legislative agenda as we were familiar with in the 60s with the passage of the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, those kinds of things. This is a very tall order budget.
It is.
Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. And I think however this goes, whoever wins the political battles that are coming up, it's going to be historic. It's going to be – we're going to be talking about like we're talking about Johnson right now, 20, 30, 40 years from now.
It's a test of leadership for Obama, a test of the legislative ability of this Congress. That's for sure.
That's right. One of the things going on that's been talked about in Congress and will continue to be is the jobless rate. The number of people without jobs continues to grow, but several governors in nine states, mostly in the South, are considering rejecting millions of dollars in federal stimulus money for increased unemployment insurance. Here's Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour.
I am going to not take all the money because of the requirement under the unemployment insurance compensation section would force us to raise taxes when the federal money runs out.
Michael Luo is a reporter for the New York Times. He joins us on the line. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Explain to us why these governors are looking to reject additional funds for jobless benefits in the midst of this economic crisis.
Yeah, essentially they're saying it actually doesn't make sense in the longer term for them. These are mostly conservative governors. Some of them are considered presidential candidates potentially in 2012. And so some of them are saying that it doesn't make sense because after this money runs out, and it could be 2 or 3 years, it could be longer in other cases, they'll be paying the bill for these benefits, and they're saying that that would cause them to raise taxes.
Now, you know, do they have some sort of backup plan to take care of their constituents if they don't take this money?
Well, I mean, these benefits are applied to very specific cases right now. I mean, it doesn't mean that anyone right now who gets benefits is going to lose them. What it is they expand benefits in certain criteria. Like just one example is in a lot of states, if you're only available to work part-time, you're not eligible for unemployment benefits. And so what this money does is it offers an incentive to these states to open up some of their eligibility requirements and change some of the rules to cover some of those people. And so simply what it means is in these states, those people, say like the part-time worker example, they just wouldn't get the benefits. But in other states that are taking the money and are willing to change their rules to abide by it, they would.
Now, one of the things you mentioned a moment ago is, you know, several of the governors are looking at possible presidential runs. How much of this battle is about jobless benefits and how much of this is about political ideology?
It's tough for me to get in their heads, obviously. There's definitely a feeling among the unemployed people whose lives are potentially at stake here that there's politics at play here. The proponents of these benefits argue that if there's nothing preventing these governors from, I mean, true, they have to change their state law, but there's nothing preventing these governors from, changing back the law in a couple of years when this money is done with, although some people argue it would be difficult to do that. But they clearly are taking a stand here, and we'll see how that plays out politically for them, whether people will embrace them for their if the, in the the Republican primary for taking this kind of stand, or if it'll come back to bite them that they weren't willing to expand unemployment benefits at a time of great need for a lot of people.
Here's one of the people that hopes not to get bitten. This is Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal.
This will result in an increase in taxes on our businesses. This will result in a permanent obligation on the state of Louisiana. It would be like spending a dollar to get a dime.
Now, Michael, does that ring true for you? I mean, is that really something that you go, oh, okay, that makes sense to me?
Yeah, there are arguments against that, what they're saying. So, like I said, they could revisit this. The other thing that proponents of expanding these benefits point out is a lot of these states, this is kind of complicated, but a lot of these states, their taxes, these payroll taxes that pay for unemployment insurance are tied to the level of money that's in their unemployment insurance trust fund. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but a lot of states' unemployment trust funds are running low at this point. And so that would trigger an automatic tax increase in some states to address that. But what this money would do, this additional money, we would send millions of dollars flowing now into these trust funds that are low right now, and that could actually prevent them from having to raise taxes right now. And so there are basically arguments on both sides.
Well, you know, that's the real head-scratcher, though, Michael. I mean, what is the precedent for governors standing in the way of a river of federal money when the tangible benefits are really evident to people who actually vote?
Right. Well, that's what one of the guys that I talked to in the story who would be directly affected by this, a guy in Texas. I mean, basically, I went out in the story where so far people have been writing about what these governors are doing, but no one's really gone out because it's kind of very specific, like who are affected, like the real lives are affected. So I went out and tried to find some of these people, and I managed to find some of them. And this guy I was talking to in Texas was talking about Governor Rick Perry. And he said, you know, this governor has taken money hand over fist from the Bush administration for all kinds of purposes, and so why is he all of a sudden standing in the way of, you know, this? This is a relatively minor portion of the stimulus package, and his conclusion is it's got to be politics.
And I guess if we're talking about money that was taken during the Bush administration, we're not talking about money directly to him. We're talking about perhaps military programs, perhaps subsidies for agricultural policies of one kind or another. Is that the sort of money that a governor might have taken, for the last 8 years?
Yeah, I think he was referring to, like, stuff for, like, transportation and highways and, you know, the kind of stuff that states get from the federal government in terms of to help them with various programs and stuff like that.
A quick question here. You know, do you see that the people who are, thinking about this are going to be affected by this? Are they angry enough to change the political balance in those states?
I'm not sure. I mean, there was some talk. When I was working on the story, I called around to a lot of unions, which aren't that strong in a lot of these states. But and there was some talk of organizing on this and some rallies. The thing about it is, this is really complicated. Actually, the people who are directly affected by this, these rules in unemployment eligibility are very difficult to explain in some cases. And so it definitely wouldn't be a matter of the workers who are directly affected by it, but it could be sort of jobless workers more broadly organizing and being upset about it. In fact, there's a woman quoted in my story in Georgia who is like that.
Thanks, Michael. We've got to end it there. Okay. We appreciate you being on the show. Michael Lewell is a reporter for The New York Times.
You know, talking with actual people who are affected by this decision to politicize the stimulus package. I mean, it's already politicized, but, it's an important kind of high-stakes game, it seems to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking about people who don't have employment and how they're going to eat every day. It's amazing.
Yo!
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.